So, we've been talking about DRM forever. Forever. As long as I can remember, and that's forever for me, so forever we've been struggling with this issue of how are we going to confront the world where not only rights existed and were expressed strongly, but technology enabled people to enforce rights strongly. And after struggling with this forever, I'm increasingly convinced that we've got to reframe this problem, because a lot of bright people have tried to figure out the answer to this problem, both on their side and our side, and none of us have a good clue yet about how to solve this problem. So, reframe the problem. There are basically three kinds of people out there. Usually there's two, but I found out there were three. There are three kinds of people out there. There are basically people out there who believe in not controlling their stuff at all. We call them communists, you know, but there are people who say, take my stuff and do with it what you want. Then there are people out there who say, don't touch my stuff unless you ask me permission, don't do anything with it at all unless you've got some affirmative rights from me. And then there's the rest of us who say, go ahead, you know, use it for lots of obvious reasons. Of course, don't make a Disney movie out of it, but for most reasons, we're completely happy that you take and use my stuff. There, therefore, are the none, I want none of my rights respected, and the alls, I want all of my rights respected, and the sums, I want some of my rights respected. Now, in the beginning of the internet, we had an architecture that essentially ratified the position of the nones. I didn't mean that to sound like people in black, but ratified the position of the nones, the people who said, I don't want to control my stuff at all. We had a technology that basically enabled everybody to take everything that's up there and to share everything and share it in the most extraordinarily efficient way, and that was great, but that created a lot of complaints, obviously, from the people who are at least in the all category, because their fear was this architecture of the nones would increasingly shrink the space that the alls could adopt, and also, those out there putting stuff up in the sum category, too, would have their rights shrunk if none of the rights that might be respected here would have been respected under this architecture of the none. So that was where we were, and the problem from that perspective was there was an obvious political response, and that was those with all the money are also those with all the rights, and those that want to assert all the rights, and they would force on this world a shift in this architecture. They would try to flip the default away from a default that supported the none to a default that supported the all. So, in the future, increasingly, they promise us an architecture, which is the DRM architecture, that takes this world where there are three categories and flips it from the default where none control to the default where all is the rule. Where all rights being controlled is the normal way in which we engage in interactions with each other. And the consequence of that is the exact same consequence we've seen before, but now flipped. It becomes harder and harder for the some to actually be out there and express themselves in a way that says, here, yeah, take and share and use, because they must embody and adopt these highly expensive and burdensome technologies to say, yeah, do with my stuff as you wish, so long as you respect the following rights. And also, it criminalizes the category of the nuns out there, criminal nuns running around, right, who are increasingly pushed off this space so that the default world of total control, supported by total information awareness, makes it possible for the alls to control, you got it, everything. Now, here's the problem. We've been solving for the extremes. We've been thinking about the world as if there's either those who care not at all, or those who care in the extreme. And the problem with that solution on either side is that it defeats the massive and most important category of people in the middle who would actually like a way to express the view that you should be able to take and share that content without suffering the deep burdens of DRM. So what we need here is a way to recognize this middle. Now, there are two strategies that have been adopted to attempt to recognize this middle. The first strategy is the one we're familiar with because a lot of us have been fighting it. Maybe all of us have been fighting it on one side or the other, I don't know. But we've been fighting it in the courts and Congress to get them to say, regulate this world in a way that the potential for the all to control everything is balanced. Restrict DRM in the following ways so that we at least can have fair use. Or assure that the DRM technologies go out there and don't make sure that they don't displace the possibility of free content to be distributed. That's a strategy. But increasingly, I'm convinced that's a strategy that's not going to work in time. And that forces, I think, us to consider a second strategy, which is increasingly the one I think we'll be spending our time on. Instead of ways to fight or limit DRM, what we need is a strategy that expresses this middle space. So I and Hal and other people in this audience are part of an organization called the Creative Commons. The Creative Commons believes that we need to begin to distinguish between this idea, DRM, and this idea, DRE. We understand there are two separate issues here, and we shouldn't be solving them together, at least not now. We ought to be finding a way for people to express simply and easily, here is the set of rights that I'm happy that you respect, without building into that expression the technologies that make it so those rights are automatically by machines enforced. Not because no one should be able to do that, let the alls do that, that's fine. But because most of us and most of the content out there is not content for which this extraordinarily strong mechanism of control is needed or valuable. The point is, for the green space in the center, these technologies of control are not just hassles, they defeat the opportunity for this content to be shared freely in a way in which the authors plainly want. So we need a way to express digital rights without that expression enforcing them necessarily, a technology to say here that this is free, or at least this is sort of free, some rights reserved, not all rights reserved, and that's the role that we believe Creative Commons in its first instantiation plays. It says, we're going to build a layer of reasonable copyright law out there on top of this background of unreasonable extremism. We live in a world now governed by this unreasonable extremism, and we can do something about that by expressing a reasonable middle. And this is a technology to do it, so that this background of control gets flooded by a default expression that says, go ahead, share in a certain way, without attempting to say to them, the alls, you shouldn't be allowed to do what you do, but instead by enabling the rest of the world to create content which is shareable freely and can compete with those who insist on controlling all of their rights. Restoring then, in this context, reasonableness through voluntary action. Now why is this important? Well, one story that's been told out there about why the Creative Commons project is important is it's going to be good for the incentives of certain artists. And we have artists out there who've begun to say, yeah, it's better for me to share my content in this way than to adopt the all rights reserved model. So Cory Doctorow, a hero of mine, publishes an extraordinary novel, Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom. On the same day it's in the bookstores, it's on the web under a CC license. Download it, do with it as you wish. He sells an extraordinary number of books in the bookstores. He gives away a massively large number of books on the web, and what he's done in thereby is increase the exposure of the world to Cory Doctorow's extraordinary writing, and he believes that will make it easier for him to be a successful writer in the future. I'm all for it. It's exactly what we should be enabling, this creative use of the net in a way that spreads culture broadly. But that's not the important or most important reason that people ought to participate in this expression of something different. The most important reason is we ought to begin to identify, to put our hands up around the world in a way that says, I believe in free here. The default is control, but I believe in free, or I believe in somewhat free, but I believe in it now and urgently, because the shift that we've seen has radically transformed the opportunity of this technology of the internet to be used to develop something different, some expression and creativity, innovation, different from the innovation and expression controlled by that tiny little red box in the corner. And when this battle began, people said, if it's either the nuns or the alls are going to win. And when you think about the places where this battle can be fought, I believed we would lose if all we had to do was to fight it in the context of Congress. Because the alls have it all, and they can go to Congress and get it all through the all that they have in the, there's a different kind of green here, a green form in which Congress responds to the alls. So they will lobby in a way which beats the nuns in the middle position because of their power. So Congress was a failure. I was that naive person who believed that there was a place out there that we could argue this as a matter of ideals and principles to establish a balance here that I thought the framers of our Constitution already gave us 210 years ago. Right? I was wrong. People said they're not ready. I said, yes, they are. I was wrong. They were right. And the consequence of them being right and me being wrong is that the courts have backed out of this battle just at the time where they could have done the most good by expressing ideals that the best interpretation of our Constitution says our framers already expressed, because our framers recognized what Hal was teaching us about the ideals behind the Statute of Man. When I lost, and we lost, a very kind lobbyist from the other side called me. He said, you know, Larry, look, all you had was ideals and principles on your side. They had, or we had, he said, all the money in the world. And he said to me, when is the last time ideals and principles won over all the money in the world? And I thought, my God, you know, racism, we were just fighting a bunch of racists, right? The 14th Amendment was about, you know, the ideals of the civil rights movement. It wasn't all the money in the world. When is the last time ideals and principles won over all the money in the world? So in the context of the court, I guess I don't have an answer for that. But I know that here and now, the question we ought to ask is not when's the last time, but when's the next time? When's the next time ideals and principles win over all the money in the world? And the next time it does is the time when we, all of us, begin to express in our every step an expression that says we believe in something different. We believe in this reasonableness, not the extremism, and we show reasonableness by building this balance in the space that marks the place we're most familiar with, this extraordinary space of potential creativity we call the internet and we can reclaim through voluntary efforts that say, we believe in freedom and we show it because our content expresses it, and let them respect what we say. Thank you very much.